Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Darren Reinke. He is the founder and managing director of Group 60, and also a podcast host on the Savage Leader podcast. I like the sound of that, Darren. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Darren, just like myself, you're someone that's involved in a lot of things. Why don't you tell our listeners about yourself and your background and touch a bit on some of the things that you're currently working on?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Just in terms of at the top, in terms of my professional focus, so I run a company called Group 60. As you mentioned, we are an executive coaching and training company. And our focus really is around building better leaders from the inside out, because I believe that so many books, so many other courses really focus on the visible behaviors that people see. It's about becoming a better decision maker, becoming a better communicator. How do you create and foster accountability within your organization? But I believe that there's this parallel journey that leaders go on that we need to develop from the inside. So it's about how do you become anchored to and focus on your values? How do you create greater authenticity? How do you deal with things like doubt, self-limiting beliefs, and fears? Because so many of those things underscore those externally visible behaviors.
Great. You talk about how do you deal with doubt or self-doubt. You know, what is, you know, one thing that jumps out to your head that people can apply so that it can help them overcome some of those fears?
Yeah, I mentioned those three things, and I view them as a continuum. So self-limiting beliefs are just those nagging thoughts in our head that could come from someone else's opinion or perspective. It could be the opinions of people that we grew up with, our family or friends, and even just the our own voices in our heads. And left unchecked, those self-limiting beliefs can become doubt, and that doubt can become fear, and which ultimately holds us back from doing things, from making really big changes in our lives and our careers, from whether it's taking on that new big promotion in an area that we've previously not explored, or it could just be about starting a new business and breaking away from corporate America and starting our own firm. So it's really those things. And if you think about how you resolve those. And really, I like to have people start with self-limiting beliefs. And it's like, well, where did that belief come from? And just, is that really true? What are the facts that really support that? And try to replace that belief with something else. And so for me, one of the things that I had is I had this limiting belief about my ability to write. And that was one of the big things that prompted me to write my book, quite frankly, is because in college, I had some relative struggles in college level English. And what I realized looking back, and that's where it gets to checking the validity of that belief, which is it was just some struggles in terms of analyzing what Kafka meant in the Metamorphosis, and not that I couldn't write it to a business audience. And so as I endeavored on writing this book, one of the big drivers of doing that was like, how can I challenge that belief? Because I want to overcome that and move forward. So that was something that an example of how you can actually deal with those beliefs and those doubts, but a practical example of how it applies to my own life and career.
Wonderful. I also want to ask you about executive coaching. A lot of times people find something about themselves or realize something about themselves that leads them in that path. It could be in athletics, professional sports, or in this case, executive coaching. At what point in your life did you realize that you were good at coaching others? Is there something particular or an event that you can remember that, you know, basically led to this epiphany?
It was definitely a bit of a long journey, and my career has been a long winding path. I started my career at Accenture in management consulting, partially because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life and my career. So I grew up in Northern California. My parents are both veterinarians, and my lens into the world and the working world was around health science. I understood what it meant to be a veterinarian or to be a physician or be even a dentist, but I had no idea what this nebulous world of business would be. And so I took that job at Accenture. It really gave me a fantastic foundation. And over the years from working at Accenture, but also working for other consulting companies and doing my own freelance consulting work, I saw that so many projects would go into the ditch because of either underdeveloped leaders or leadership teams. And so I had this just idea in my head about, here's something that can actually help solve some of these projects that go awry. And from a coaching perspective, as an athlete, or at least a high school athlete growing up, I knew what coaching was from a sports context, but I didn't really understand what it was from a business context. And luckily I had a fantastic mentor of mine, Annette, who used to run the global consulting business or division for Gallup. And she was going through a coach training program. I thought, hey, for the first time in my life, I'm not going to know what's going to come out on the backside, but I do know that it'll be very complementary to the consulting work that I'd been doing, and found it to definitely be so. And although I didn't think I wanted to become 100% executive coach and just log hours and hours and hours of coaching one-on-one. And for now, I really just select a very finite list of people that I work with one-to-one, personal at least, and eventually evolved into just pure play executive coaching and training as a way just to really make transformation in leaders. Because it's something that's just really, I see the need for, but it really excites me. I love to see shifts in people and to become great for themselves.
You have come out with a new book titled Savage Leader. I believe it came out January 3rd of this year. Tell us about that. First of all, I really love the name Savage Leader. Why did you decide to call it that?
Yeah, great question. I actually had some people challenge me in terms of why I call it the Savage Leader. But to me, it's just something that's, it's a little bit catchy, to be honest, but also is, to me, being savage is, it's not to be this, you know, wild, unpolished person like that, but it's really about being savage is someone that's confident enough to really to dig deep within themselves and to understand, like, what are the values that are most important to me? How can I really embody those in my life and my career? How can I think about being my most authentic self? And to me, that's being savage and less about the other things. But that's a couple of reasons of why I named the book what it was, and just something to be a little bit different in the marketplace.
Wonderful. Actually, this resonates to me because I was looking at it on Amazon, and I saw that on the front cover, you have an image of I think it's the face of a lion. There's a documentary on Nat Geo. It's called Savage Kingdom, and it's basically around the same principle. So I like how you tied that. I'm not sure if you've seen the documentary, but I found that to be an interesting correlation, because you may have never even heard about this documentary, but there's some ties to what that documentary is about and what you're trying to instill to people as far as leadership.
Yeah, no, it's I've definitely heard of that documentary. I haven't seen it, but I'll definitely add it to my viewing list. But to me, my own purpose and my own why is to unleash the inner lion within leaders. And so I have a ... an extension of that why. But interestingly enough, I was originally thinking of the cover art as being this combination of Lord of the Flies, meet, you know, something else around leadership. And my wife said, why don't you use the lion? She's like, you're always talking about this lion. So I got to give my wife credit for the cover art.
Yeah, they always got to get credit. That's good. I'm glad she recommended that. What do you hope that the readers take away from having read the book?
So if the book to me is written to a broad audience, and to me, I see so much change that's happening in the marketplace, whether it's a profound failure of leadership across corporations, across the nonprofit world, across government, and even the church in some cases. And I think it's really on all of us to really step up and to be leaders within our organization. So it's written to from that perspective, but also just in terms of the people that want something more out of their life. They want to be great, or at least to be better. So it's written for that audience, and it's 13 principles. As I mentioned before, it really ties to that inner journey that we go on as leaders to become great, or at least to be better. And so my hope is that people walk away with at least one practical tip they can apply in their life. And the way that the book was written, so it's a series of anecdotes. So initially it was intended to be just purely other people, but I ended up threading more of my own stories into it, whether it was to be cathartic or just because I thought it might be helpful to some of the readers. And so each story is punctuated with a key takeaway, because I may have some crazy story that doesn't pertain exactly to business leaders, for example, of an Ironman triathlete or a Silicon Valley entrepreneur or of a Navy SEAL or even a therapist. And I wanted to land that so that people could say, okay, well, how does this actually apply to me? And then each chapter, which is a principle, ends with a challenge, because I personally always get frustrated because I'll go to a seminar, I'll read a book, I'll watch a fantastic TED talk. I'm excited. I'm ready to go, but I want some way to apply it. So the challenge is intended so that people can actually take what they read and go apply it into their career, into their life.
Trick question now. You said you have 13 principles that you go over in the book. Do you have one principle that you love above all the other 12?
I don't know if I'd say love them. And there's actually one that I can give three for the price of one, but I'll skip that one so I won't play that trick. But to me, the first one is the most foundational, which is about understanding and anchoring to your values, because that's so important to us. And it helps us to stay on the path, to be consistent with who we are, to be authentic, to make sure that we're able to build teams and extension of those values that we have for ourselves. I think that's the first one, is whether it's finding what matters to you, is what I talked about in my own personal story that I learned from living in the south of Brazil and what mattered to me most, and or whether it's understanding how values can shift over time. Or just even one of the entrepreneurs that I met, which I thought was really fascinating, was he actually developed the value pillars for his company before he even launched his company, which I thought was pretty important and pretty neat, because he said, okay, here's what matters most to me, and here's the firm that I'm going to build and how it's going to be an extension of my own personal values and that of my founding team.
I know for a fact that writing a book is a very tedious endeavor. There are plenty of people out there that will want to write a book, or it's something that they've considered but felt that they may not have the bandwidth to do so because of either work or family or any given reason. What suggestion can you offer to those that find themselves in such predicament on how to overcome this challenge so that they can work on their books and get them published?
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that, because writing a book on top of everything that you mentioned. So for me, it's my career. I'm a very committed husband and dad. I want to make sure that I'm there for my family. And finding time for it, I think, it is a real challenge. I'd say the first thing is just to have a goal or have a purpose or have an intention. And for me, my goal, as I mentioned earlier, was to challenge the self-limiting beliefs. So it was really a part of my personal development path, is something to prove to myself. But also, I'd been speaking, I'd been coaching and doing a lot of work with clients. And I wanted to have everything packaged in a neat container. So in this case, the 13 principles about the inner journey that leaders go on to become great. And so with those two big goals in mind, that really helped me carve out the time and space. But so that's more of like a mindset and motivation perspective. So I think find a goal or find a purpose. Like, what's the purpose? What's your goal of writing this book? And whether it's to create greater awareness for your company, or for to build a personal brand, or to put thoughts out into the universe, or just, you know, maybe it's about closing a chapter, a difficult moment in your past, and how that could be helpful to other people as well. But practically speaking, for me, I carved out time in the early morning. So it's a lot of 5 a.m.s on the middle of the week, on weekends, on vacation, where I'm literally looking outside the window and it's pitch black outside. I've got my headphones on and I'm just cranking away at my keyboard. So finding that time where you're uninterrupted, of course, because you can't have emails, texts coming in, because I can guarantee that's going to get in the flow of your writing and the creative process, but also when you're most creative. For me, that's early morning. Some people, it could be late at night or after a workout or in the mid-afternoon, but I think finding time to do that is really important as well. So that's like a practical tip, but also a mindset tip.
And another thing that people that have gone through publishing or publication don't know about is you can either self-publish or you can go through one of the bigger publishing houses. Is there any advantage going through one over the other in your experience?
Yeah, I'm definitely not an expert on that, but I've talked to a lot of people, a bunch of writers, a lot of authors. And for me, it came down to, I was writing this book, I was working with an editor, and she suggested that, hey, this is interesting enough, or hopefully interesting enough, to get an agent and go the traditional route. Mm-hmm. But the big thing for me was that would have tacked on an extra 12 months to the project. And some of the big benefits are obviously having a publisher, you know, a Wiley or a Penguin Books on the inside cover of your book, which is helpful. But still, ultimately, those publishers require you to have a big following and a big audience. They'll actually, while you may get an advance and get money, they still put the onus for marketing onto you. So that's one thing to take into consideration. And from a self-publishing perspective, it gives you greater control, because you can price it how you want. You can distribute it how you want. You can make changes to the book. The Amazon marketplace is really powerful. Of course, they take a nice cut, but publishers obviously do as well. But that's a nice way to get out into the market. You can make updates pretty seamlessly. You can control the way you market it and you distribute it. So I think that's something to consider. And also for me, it was just speed, because I'd spent a couple of years on this project. It took way longer than I thought it would. I said, okay, I'll get this published by this birthday. Okay, now by the end of this year for the holidays. And then it was another year. And the pandemic actually gave me time to slow down, just given my limited travel, or I should say no travel for the last year, just gave me that time just to push it over that final 1 yard, or maybe it was more like 10 yards to get that finish. But I think those are a couple of the big benefits of publishing it versus self-publishing it. But there's a lot of experts out there, a lot of great book marketing podcasts, and a lot of services that can advise people as well.
I cannot agree more, because a lot of the things that you mentioned are some things that my co-author, John, and I went through when we wrote our book. And there's a lot of pros and cons if you want to go the traditional route versus self-publishing. But one thing that was important to us was the timing as well, because you have to wait. You know, they have a backlog of releases if you want to go the traditional route versus something that you have more control over. So that was something that appealed to us and mm-hmm. is why we went that route. But I'm glad to see that you also had a similar experience, even though our timing was kind of different. There are different types of leadership styles, and some of this work better than others, depending on the situation or environments within organizations. You can talk about transformational leaders, bureaucratic leaders, democratic leaders, and so on and so forth. Based on your research, what are the common types of leadership styles that tend to work best in terms of championing organizational strategy?
When you mentioned championing organizational strategy, I think about being a champion or an evangelist or just someone who's trying to gain buy-in and alignment. And to me, I think the first point, and this isn't exactly about leadership styles, but it starts with making that connection between that vision of the company, that strategy of the company that you're trying to achieve, with the people and what they're focused on. So in terms of leadership styles, if you want a catch-all or a style, is servant leadership is definitely, I think, a style that people, they tend to be more successful in terms of championing organizational strategy, or something that we talk about, which is shifting from becoming a manager to being a coach of your team, which is very similar in some ways to servant leadership, where you're showing up, it's about their agenda, it's about what they're trying to achieve. It's about connecting to what matters most to them and to their values. But from a practical perspective, I think a lot of it is making sure that you can make the case for why. And, you know, beyond just like the what and the how, it's like, well, why does this matter to us? What are we trying to achieve as an organization? But why does it matter to the individual? And we do a lot of work with helping leaders communicate more effectively with their teams. And a lot of that comes down to adapting to the individual. So if people are motivated by performance, they're motivated by process or analysis, or they may be motivated by helping other people. And if you can connect your communication style to mirror what the person likes to receive, that can be really helpful in terms of connecting with them to gain alignment, to gain buy-in. But ultimately that can help you connect with their own sense of why and their own sense of purpose as well. But in terms of answering a specific style, I think that servant leadership, or what we call manager as a coach, is an effective way for people to really be effective in championing organizational strategy.
Right. So that you can at least get them to follow your lead and you know, essentially be a part of the collective group, so that it's not just you dictating, hey, do this and that, and you'll sit back and watch. So I actually like that type of leadership style.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, not do as I say, it's do as I do. And a lot of people, even at the highest levels of organizations, directly violate that. So it's really important, just as a great life principle, is to lead by example. And, you know, something that I learned early on, actually through sports, was about not leading by example. And just pardon a little bit of a departure here from this conversation, but I was a co-captain of my varsity high school basketball team. We'd been really successful, had a great early preseason, won some tournaments, and we were struggling against one of our big arch rivals, and our season looked like it was going to crater. And so I came to the sideline and I kicked this set of water bottles, and it launched water onto my teammates and some of the fans in the first couple of rows. And I realized in that moment that I absolutely did not lead by example. And it's something that really has stuck with me. It seems so simple and maybe trivial from something when I was 18 years old, but it really stuck with me in terms of, it's so important that we lead by example, because I can't talk about composure in a sports context if I'm directly violating that and, you know, kicking these water bottles. And the same thing goes for leadership at the highest levels now, or whether you're in a startup or whether you're a teacher or doing some great community work out there, is to make sure that you truly do lead by example. And it's not just about the words, but it's about the actions.
If I could follow up on that example, looking back, how do you think you should have reacted to probably try and galvanize the team and go out and perform better versus, you know, what seems like unraveling because you're kicking a bottle. What do you think you could have done differently knowing what you know now?
That's a great question. And so actually I never thought about that until this moment, but it's tough in the moment. And this is, sounds like an excuse because companies are just in moments all the time where there's disruption, there's change, there's marketplace shifts, there's what happened in 2020 and continues to linger on this year as well. But it's finding a time in that moment to pause and take a step back. And even if it was just a 30 second timeout, just go, you know, hey guys, you know, this is going to be one of the many bumps that we're going to have in the road. Just remember what we're aiming for, which is for us to have a championship season. And just go, look, you know, this is part of the process. We're going to have some moments where we are going to fail. We're going to fall short. But I like to pull back to some of those big things that we said about doing at the beginning of the season, which is about teamwork, being there for each other and so forth. So taking that step back, which I think that I should have done in that moment, although I don't think I was nearly mature enough to have done that as an 18-year-old kid. But something that I look back and is, of course, it's easy to say in hindsight, but really it's taking some of those, that moment to really pause and reflect and think about what that North Star is, whether it's for the team or the organization or what you're trying to, what impact you're trying to have in the marketplace or on the community.
That's a good personal example. So how can leaders, senior leaders in an organization bring out the best in their direct reports when it comes to instilling exemplary leadership principles?
It definitely gets back to what we just talked about, which is leading by example, or in my case, you know, the not leading by example, because that's ultimately what's going to matter. And to me, I think there's three fundamental attributes to become a great leader is one, you have to have a desire to be great, or at least to be better. And greatness is kind of an interesting term because everyone's got a different definition of greatness. It's not necessarily to create a unicorn company, you know, it could just be even a great developer of people, it could be a great teacher, great educator, even just a great parent. So that's the first thing, is that desire, that burning desire to be great, or at least to be better. And then the second thing, which is around that desire to be introspective. So look inward, look for some of the things that we could possibly do better. Look at what our values are, what matters most, and so that we can anchor to those things. And then the third piece, which is how do you activate all that? How do you activate the desire to be great and the introspection? It's that desire to and willingness to put in the hard work, because growing and changing takes a ton of time. It creates a ton of intentional effort because that's what's really going to matter. But so I think leading by example and showing off those things, showing that, hey, look, I'm desiring to be get better and to grow. I'm not this perfect leader like you, and showing some of those vulnerabilities. I've made mistakes in the past. Here's what I've learned from those things. I'm showing that introspection to say like, hey, look, I'm open to feedback from the team. I'm making that part of my regular activity in terms of asking for feedback, but I'm putting in that work to get better. I'm reading, I'm going through courses, I'm asking for people's feedback, I'm trying new things, I'm trying scary things. And if you are leading by example, I think that's so important. But then applying that is being that coach to your team, focusing on what their agenda is, what their growth goals are, and supporting them in that, and providing the resources, asking some of those great questions, being an active listener, and supporting them on their own journey to become better and to be ultimately great.
As we all know, the world as we know it has dramatically changed, predominantly because of COVID. What is the biggest challenge facing organizational leaders today? And what strategic recommendations can you discuss on how they can overcome these challenges?
Yeah, a great question. And I think it's what you mentioned, the biggest challenge for leaders is adapting to change. But, you know, change, whether it's from the results of the pandemic, and if you're in retail, which is just really an acceleration of what was happening with the shift to e-commerce, or if you're in the hospitality space and you saw your, you know, your revenues just crater and hopefully have rebounded back more recently, or whether it's just from disruption, you've got these really agile startups that are all in on a singular focus that are looking to just to blow you out of the water as an established organization. So I think that the biggest challenge from my experience is that adapting to change, which is part a mindset shift, which is like accepting that and acknowledging that. But then thinking about change in terms of that recommendation is something I mentioned earlier as well, is the best way to adapt to change, or one of them, is to really push out leadership into all tentacles of the organization. And that's why I can mention part of what I mentioned about the book was around, hey, we all need to step up as leaders, whether it's to make up for some of the profound failures of leadership, but also we need leaders from in all parts of the organization to have that sense of accountability and even ownership, because it could be that frontline customer service rep who for the first time hears about a new competitor or hears about a pain point for some of our customers that can allow us to bubble that up within the organization. And if you've got a bunch of people who are just showing up to work as customer service or as frontline salespeople or even in the marketing department, and they don't have that sense of ownership or that sense of leadership, they're not going to be listening for those things. They're not going to be willing to share that because they're not going to have that sense of ownership. So I think it's so much of it is just having that mindset, but then also instilling that within all parts of the organization that, hey, we all need to be leaders. And obviously it's going to look different depending on people's role and in different organizations. But I think that's one of the big things is how do you adapt to change and just pushing out that sense of leadership and ownership across an organization.
Going back to the book, what's the one tip that you can share with our readers or our listeners in this case on how they can apply some of the recommendations that you've described in your book?
I would say it's all about authenticity. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the chapters in itself. And do what lands best with you. And I think that so many times people they'll watch a TED talk, they'll read a book, they'll hear about some, you know, multitasking or switch tasking, I think as Elon Musk calls it. And they try to just literally copy and paste that. And it's like, well, let's look at it through the lens of our own unique set of values and strengths and to adapt that style or that best practice to our own style. And the same thing goes with the book. There's 13 principles. Some may resonate well, some may not at all. And making sure you adapt those and you tailor those to your own style, to your own values, to your own strengths, much like I advocate in one of the principles in the book, is to do that with the entire book. And also it's a guide for people that over time, certain things are going to be really resonant. For example, it may be about connecting to and understanding their values and how that impacts their own leadership style or that of their teams or their companies. And other times it may be about going to a new market, adapting to or accounting for some of those self-limiting beliefs and doubts and fears. And so it's almost like this virtuous loop, if you will, that you're going to constantly come back to different things. So consider it a guide that you can use over time. I surely do. I know for me, a lot of the things and the way that I wrote the book was just in why I shared some of my own stories is like, look, I'm going through this journey alongside my clients. And that's part of the way that I actually coach people is sharing some of those, my own personal vulnerabilities, partially as a way to mirror how they could do that with their own teams, but also to say like, hey, it's okay to struggle with this doubt or this fear of trying on a new behavior, trying on a new leadership style for my team. And so the same thing goes for the book, but you know, like I said, just making sure things are authentic to yourself, but also revisit some of these principles over time, because I do find them to be really a critical part of that inner journey to become a great leader.
Will you be creating an online course around the main concepts of this book, in this case, the 13 principles? And also, where can people buy the book? I know I saw it on Amazon, but are there any other platforms that people can find the book from?
So creating an online course is something that we're working on. So right now, as part of the book, there's a call to action in two places. That there's a Savage Leader Field Guide that basically just expands upon the challenge section and gives you a lot of great tools. It's an editable PDF where you can print it out if you want to do it that way. And so that's one thing. And we're going to extend that into a 13-week digital course that people can do some Q&A. I'll talk about some things, go deeper in some of the lessons, share some newer stories from what I've learned from coaching people and my own life, and then bringing some of those challenges to home, answering questions and so forth to people. That's something that's coming down the pipe. But in terms of your question about where can they get the book? So if you go to Amazon, just type in The Savage Leader, or you can search on Google and you'll come across a page on our website, or you can go to thesavageleader.com, which will give you more information about the book and a link to buy it if you want on Amazon.
We'll make sure we link those links that you provided to the description of this episode. One last thing, what has helped you get to where you are, and what of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's identical to yours?
That's a deep question, and something, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I think things that I've thought about so much over my life is that sense of purpose and that sense of why, which it's not something that people like a flash of light that comes to you. And that's something that I struggle with, because you read these books, you hear about these people that had a near-death experience or had this just seminal moment where they said, look, I'm going to go and do this. And that's fantastic. But for so many of us, it doesn't happen that way. it's about constant introspection, reflection, to think about like what matters most, and then how do you live out those values on a day-to-day basis. But also it's about being authentic to who you are. And for so long, I spent time thinking about, okay, I have to be the smart Darren, the Accenture Darren, the Berkeley Haas MBA Darren. And for me, it's about being true to myself, which is, you know, some of the core things around being vulnerable, being expressing humility, things like that, and connecting with people, because that's what matters. Is so connecting and anchoring to my values and my purpose, and then just being truly authentic to who you are. Because whether it's, and it may sound a little bit cliche, but is being authentic can go such a long way in terms of motivating and inspiring and empowering your team members. But to your question, the second question, which is about getting involved in the path that I'm in, is executive coaching is such a gift for myself. I'm learning so much about myself, because a lot of it requires you to put in time and effort to develop your own self so that you can become a better leader and a better coach. But there's all sorts of training programs. I went through a great training program from Coach U, which really allowed me to pull together all of my experience in managing people and mentoring and advising people, but gave me a nice coaching framework. And then also just continued focus on some of those soft skills, because a lot of things that I've applied to become a better coach, becoming a more active listener, to communicating and asking broad awareness, creating questions, becoming present in the moment, that's helped me as a coach, but it's also helped me to actually coach other people in their journey to become a better leader and a better coach to their team. So I guess it's a two-part question. One, which is advice in terms of what I've learned from my own career, my own life, but also for people interested in executive coaching and how they can get involved in that track of their career.
Be authentic and be true to yourself. Darren, thanks for coming on and talking to us. I look forward to reading your book and also talking to you soon.
Thanks for having me on.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.